Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 866. It's the 7th of September 2017. On the podcast today, I have Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST, and Colin gives an operational update on their gas field in Slovenia. Plus, I also have Jerry Randall, CEO of Venture Life Group, VLG, and Jerry discusses a new long-term distribution agreement and record sales for the company's Labatie range in China. Plus, I also have Paul Gazzard, non-executive director of Duke Mount Capital, DKE ticker, and Paul talks about the acquisition of the first of several potential purchases it has been presented with. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers Ashmore Group, Go Ahead Group, and Biffa. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication, talks about Petrofac, Midrich Group, that's MIDW, and Destiny Pharma, DEST. And as always, top five most followed companies on the platform Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Hutchinson, CEO of Ascent Resources, AST. Colin, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Justin. It's great to be back with you.
Yeah, well, it's always nice to get you on because I'm following the story. There's a lot of people following the story, actually. You are the most followed company on Vox Markets, and I know a lot of people will always like to hear from you. So you've had a bit of news out, which is being welcomed by the look of the share price, and we'll get to that in a bit. But for people not aware of you, and there may be some people out there, Carl, who haven't heard of Ascent Resources, that can you give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Sure, Justin. Very briefly, Ascent, we're an AIM-listed oil and gas exploration production company. Our principal asset is the Petišovci field, which is in northeastern Slovenia. We've been working on the field for about 10 years now, and we're now at the stage where we've got one well in test production. We're going to put the second well into test production very shortly, and we're also a couple of weeks away from commissioning a export pipeline, which will allow us to export increased volumes to Croatia for sale, which will make the company profitable and cash generative.
Marvellous. Okay, well, like I said, the operational update days concerning that, a little bit of that and a little bit of PG-11A well as well. So take us into the detail here, Colin, if you could.
Yeah, it's been about a month since our last update. So the RNS this morning should bring shareholders up to date with the current situation in the field. So what's happened over the summer is we finally completed well PG-11A. It was a problematic one. It took a long time to fish one of the stuck tools out of the tubing, but everything's now clear and the well will be put onto test production tomorrow. They're connecting it up this morning, so that's big relief. It took a lot longer than expected, but it's great to finally be there. It'll be good to get that well flowing over to the CPP tomorrow. The other piece of news is then the other bit is to say that we have everything now on our side ready to go to flow to INA. We've got the two wells ready. They'll be connected up. The CPP refurbishment's been done. The flow lines have been connected. The pipelines have all been tested, connected, and everything's certified on our side. And we've also done all the process stuff with INA. We've exchanged bank guarantees, we've exchanged procedural documents and operating certificates. So everything's done apart from this one last piece of paper that we're waiting on, which is from the Croatian government, which is going to say that they are able to transport gas along this pipeline on the Croatian side. So that, we've been advised by INA, will take another week or two, let's say 2 weeks, and then we should be able to flow gas before the end of the month.
Okay, good question there. So the customer you're currently selling gas to, the Slovenian customer, when you start, you know, shipping out to INA, will you still be selling that customer or not, or just to INA?
I think it's likely that we will continue to supply them as well. That they've been supplied by some of the baseline production that our joint venture partner Geo Energo produces from the field. So they may wish to continue to supply them with some of that, but we can supply them with our production as well because their baseline production they might be happy to send it from the joint venture. So I've had an initial discussion with the partner about whether we want to continue to supply them, and I think it's likely we will supply them, if not 100% of the requirements, certainly a percentage of it.
Yeah, so there's no such thing as a sort of exclusivity sort of deal with Ina, is it? You can still sell to who you want, is that right?
We could, yeah, we could sell to anyone. We've agreed with Ina to give them a range of production between a minimum and a maximum every day. Mm-hmm. But if we've got more production, we can sell it elsewhere. We'll sell it wherever we get the best price.
So I assume the production to Ina is more than you'll be selling to the Slovenian customer, is it? Is that right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Okay. It's significantly more, yeah.
Yeah. And so also, I mean, I know you can't reveal this, and you said you will update the market when it's right, but people are asking of volumes and how much you're looking to sell, how much it'll cost and all this. So when do you think, Colin, you'll be able to update the market on the kind of volume you'll be selling by Ina?
As I said, the Ina contract structured with a maximum and a minimum quantity that we supply every day. We'll supply within that range. So in the RNS, when we say that we're finally in production, I can put those figures in that, and I at that time I can say roughly what those would equate to in revenue terms based on sort of the average prices we've seen in the market over the last 12 months or so.
Okay, there are, so in a couple weeks time, you can probably, when this finalizes, you'll be able to sort of give an estimate as to the volumes then, will you, maximum, minimum?
Yeah, I mean, and there is a presentation on the company website which has my sort of field development plan in it, and you can see from that what sort of volumes I'm anticipating in the sort of first 12 months of production.
Marvellous stuff. And, well, Colin, there's only one thing left to do. I mean, you've got a lot of followers, but if people are listening to this right now and they like the fact you've gone from exploration to development, now, you know, producing and selling it, could you give them sort of three reasons why, if they're not following you, they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, sure, Justin. I mean, I think Ascent is now in a very strong position. I think the three reasons are we're already in production and we're going to increase that production significantly in the short term. The second reason is that we're debt free now. We've got a virtually debt free. We've got 50k of debt left on the balance sheet, so we're in a very strong financial position. And I guess the third reason is that this really positions the company. This is the start of the company's journey. This isn't the end. So this puts us in a very strong position to grow from here. We can grow the asset, we can grow Petisovci itself, we can grow within Slovenia, or we can grow further afield. So we're very well positioned for future growth.
Marvellous stuff, Colin. Good to hear from you. And hopefully we'll speak again very soon, because maybe a couple of weeks. Who knows? Thanks, Colin.
Hopefully, Justin. Yeah. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jerry Randall, CEO of Venture Life Group. That's VLG ticker. Jerry, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome, Justin.
You've had a bit of news out of late, and the market's taken well to it by the looks of it, as I'm looking at the moment. In double-digit figures gained, I'm looking at over 12% at the moment, up. We'll get to that in a bit, Jerry. For people listening right now, they're not sure as to what Venture Life Group do. Could you give a brief summary as to the business, please?
Yeah, sure. So Venture Life is an international self-care business. We develop products for the aging population that are sold around the world through pharmacies. So the products that you will go to the pharmacy, choose yourself, pay for yourself and treat yourself. And we deal with the conditions associated with aging, particularly things such as cholesterol, cognitive function, joint pain, oral care, etc. And we make those at our factory in Italy, and we distribute into over 40 countries around the world.
Marvellous stuff. And one of those products is UltraDex, and you've got Success Continues. Explain, Jerry, why is the success continuing here?
We acquired the UltraDex product back in March 2016. It's a range of oral care products, predominantly for a fresh breath, but also they're very good for general oral hygiene and antibacterial work in your mouth. And when we bought those products, it's a mouthwash and it's toothpaste, they were sold predominantly in the UK. Mm-hmm. Part of Venture Life's business model is to internationalise all of our products. And so we've had a lot of effort, as well as growing the UK, and that's going very well. We've been partnering the product out around the world, and we're very pleased to announce another partnership today, which is with Polypharma in Italy. They're a well-known company. They're owned by the Angelini family, which are a massive family in the healthcare business in Italy. And they specialise in oral care and going to dentists, hygienists, and also selling into the pharmacy. So we're delighted to be able to strike a long-term deal with them to launch the product in Italy. And that is in addition to the earlier international deals that we've done earlier this year in the Nordics and also in Spain last year. So it's about expanding the reach of the product and generating a lot more revenue out of the product. And this is another step in that direction.
Yeah, and I mean, it's pretty hard to say, but you know, you achieved record growth monthly sales in the UK in June this year.
Yes, we did.
And what sort of size is the market of Italy compared to you know, UK?
Well, it's interesting because population-wise, it's very similar. You know, it's around the 60 million mark, so it's very similar. But what is interesting in Italy is they do have a larger focus on what I would call proactive wellness and healthcare. So, for example, the probiotic market's quite big in Italy. They tend to serve up probiotics alongside drugs in order to minimise the effects. So it's a very, very much a market where people go to the pharmacy and look for products to help with their general health and well-being, and Ultradex will fit very well into that. So size-wise, as I say, very similar to the UK.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next bit of update here on MycoClear. And this is a, what, am I correct in saying this is an in-house product, is that right?
Yes, we developed MycoClear last year. We got product registration or product approval in Europe in March of this year. It's a product for nail fungus, so that can affect you on the fingernails or the toenails. It tends to affect you more as you get older because it's related to immune response. And we developed a brand new product. We filed a patent for that. We have an application ongoing now. And we're undertaking some clinical trials at the moment, because when you get approval for the product, you're then free to undertake human clinical trials, which we've begun. But we've managed to sign this product already with the two partners who, based on even the in vitro trials that we've done, are very excited about the product. So they wanted to take it straight away. So we've signed deals, I think, ahead of the time scale we expected. One with an existing partner, one with a brand new partner out in Egypt and the Middle East. So, yeah, very happy with that.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And let's go from the Middle East to the Far East in China. Yeah. Labatti update, what's happening there?
So Labatti is our range of skincare products, which we launched in China just over a year ago, July 2016. And we've got a partner there who has a large number of their own stores. And quite incredibly, they're growing that number very rapidly. At the start of the year, I think they had about 1,300 stores, and they've now opened their 2,000th store, which is remarkable growth for a company. But they've launched our skincare brand a year ago, and the sales are just on a fantastic upward trend, and the July figures showed a substantial increase. I'm not allowed to disclose the numbers under the confidentiality in the contract, but when we give our results presentation on the 21st, people will see the graph of the growth, and you'll see that it's growing very strongly. So we're very happy. It always takes a while to launch a product into the market and get traction, but they seem to have you know, hit the right notes to get that traction, and it's moving very well. So we're very happy with that.
Yeah, so you're, and you mentioned there your half-year results are out on the 21st, and do you think, obviously you can't reveal anything now, but do you think investors will be pleased by these, Jerry?
I think they will. I mean, we in our pre-trading, our trading update in July, we indicated the revenue. We'd achieved over 28% growth compared with the same half in the previous year. So, and that's predominantly all organic growth. There's a little bit of impact because we bought Ultradex partway through the previous period, but you know, nearly 20% organic growth out of our portfolio, which we're, you know, we're very pleased with. So I'm sure investors will be very happy with the results that we see in the 21st.
Excellent stuff. Well, Jerry, if someone's listening to this now and they like the sound of how your products are doing around the world, but are not following you yet on Vox Markets, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page there, please.
Sure. Well, I think the first reason is we're in a fantastic demographic space. So we're servicing the aging population, the increasing need to be responsible for your own healthcare and pay for your own healthcare. And so we're in a space that's going to see rapid growth. And I think if you look over the next, let's say, 30 years, you're going to see the population of over 60s more than double, in fact, almost treble. So it's a market that's expanding rapidly. I think, secondly, we delivered our first EBITDA profit last year. We're going to be growing that profit this year. So we're a profitable business, and we're generating more and more revenues from existing product base. And then finally, we're a company that likes to acquire to grow as well. And we've had a number of successful acquisitions already, and we'll continue to do that. So there'll be strong growth coming from the portfolio, both organically and through acquisition, which will generate good value into the share price of the company. So I think the target price for analysts at the moment is around the 120 to 130 mark, and we're sat at below 60p. So I think it's a great buying opportunity for investors.
Yeah, well, I did look at the chart. Interesting. You know, fundamentals are improving, and it's not being seemingly reflected in the chart here. So, yeah, very interesting.
No, I agree.
Well, Jerry, thanks for that. And like you say, you know, your results are not too far away. So hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Great, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Gazzard, Non-Executive Director of Duke Mount Capital. That's DKE ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me again.
Pleasure, Justin. Good to be speaking to you again this morning.
Yeah, well, you've had a bit of news out, so we'll get to that in a bit, the completion of the first acquisition. But before we do that, Paul, and get into the details of that deal, explain, because it's quite a unique model you've got here at Duke Mount Capital. Explain how it works and what you're all about, please.
So, happily, Duke Mount is all about finding developments and developers in the building sector who want to develop properties that are targeted at the supported living sector, supported housing sector, and aggregating some of those transactions, which normally might be too small for that market, and then selling the yield from those onto yield-seeking investors such as life insurance and pension funds.
And Duke Mount, what, control of the freehold, are they?
So, yes, the ultimate goal for Duke Mount is to make a profit by achieving a yield differential between its buying and selling price, but also ultimately to end up with a freehold of the underlying assets as well. So when those leases expire with the yield-seeking institutions after maybe 30 or 50 years, the underlying freehold reverts to Duke Mount as well. So we have a wonderfully accretive underlying asset base to the business as well.
Excellent stuff. And so let's go through the first agreement here, acquisition. What's the details on this, please, Paul?
Well, the details are this is a site that we've acquired. We are in the process of agreeing a lease with a housing association. That lease will be one that is appealing to investors. And once we've signed that lease, we'll begin the development. And we will then hope to realise a profit. We've targeted a minimum or at least £1 million on that, and we'd hope to realise that as soon as all of the lease and the development terms are agreed and things get underway, which should be in the very near future.
Yeah, and so how many of these kind of deals will you be doing before you can sort of package it up and then offer the yield to sort of bigger, you know, institutional investors?
That's all driven by size and quality of each of the individual transactions, mm-hmm. and the appetite at the time of the people who want to do the investing in that yield. There is a significant yield gap in the market, and it's that yield gap that we've been created really to try and feed by grouping up these acquisitions into appealing size packages for those larger institutions. So really, that is a moving target, and obviously we'll do those transactions as quickly as we can.
Mm-hmm. And I assume you're always on the lookout, and you're always doing some due diligence on different sites, are you?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a number of transactions in the pipeline. We've had an update out not too long ago about that pipeline, both overseas and in the UK. So the pipeline is very well developed. We spent quite a long time now since we came to market making sure that pipeline is in good shape. And we very much hope this is the first of many transactions to come of this type.
Excellent stuff. Well, listen, if someone's listening right now, Paul, and they like the sound of this model, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them sort of three reasons why they should hit that follow button, please?
Certainly. It is a unique model, but the three reasons that you really want to be following this business are you've got a hugely focused management with excellent experience. Now we've got a well-developed pipeline now, so you're coming to it when we've had a good few months to develop that pipeline as well as the flotation process, and we are still relatively small. So any deal that we bring through to market is significantly value enhancing for the share price and the value of the company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at this market cap now, just a tad of a 1.5 million. So like you say, it doesn't take a lot to move the needle there.
Correct.
So, excellent. Paul, thanks for that. And like you said, you've got a pipeline there, so hopefully we'll be chatting in the not-too-distant future about future deals. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Hello, Justin. Yeah, very, very well, thank you. Very well.
Cool.
Busy old Thursday as per normal.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff coming out. And the one that's caught my eye initially was actually Ashmore, which many will know is an emerging market specialist fund manager.
Mm-hmm.
And unsurprisingly, they're optimistic about the emerging markets. When have they ever not been?
Yeah.
They've, to quote the statement today, the improvement in the emerging market cycle apparently has further to go. Now, I know it's easy to be cynical about all these things, but I have to say, I think they're right on this front. And what's interesting is money is starting to come back into emerging markets. Ashmore's assets under management went up 12%, and they had underlying subscriptions, net inflows, even adjusting for sort of that positive market impact, which is actually the first year they've seen that since, I believe, 2014. So the cycle has turned. People have become more optimistic about the emerging markets. We all know the longer term story, and Ashmore are certainly pretty smart cookies. I see over the last year, 91% of their assets have outperformed their benchmarks, which is a pretty good average. Putting it all together, I quite like this one. Mm-hmm. It's one which is not the most liquid stock in the world. It is quite tightly held. There is a big sort of a founder management ownership. But if you take a look at the share price chart, the shares have come off today. When I last looked, the shares were down about 5%, but it's come down to sort of a quite interesting level, and certainly it's one sort of thematically I quite like. So Ashmore, I think, is worth a look. I'm optimistic about the emerging markets. I think they could do quite well as a consequence.
Yeah, do you know what? It's one of these charts. It's an odd sort of last. It's got nowhere. It's trading in a range, which can be quite good, I suppose. But they're down today a bit, aren't they? But It's almost to the bottom of that range.
It's yeah, that,
340. 340, 370 is the range, you know, and it's at the bottom of the range today. So
yeah, that's what caught my eye. And, you know, I'm a fundamentalist at heart. I look at kind of trends and numbers and whatever. And, you know, as I say, I like the emerging markets per se, both tactically and structurally. Ashmore are a good operator in that area. But when something, I think these numbers are very much sort of travel and arrive. You know, people have expected good numbers and they've got them. And it's sort of, okay, guys, what's next?
Yeah.
And there's always skepticism on sort of that front, let alone sort of geopolitical excitements or whatever, which may impact shorter term matters. But you're absolutely right about the range shorter term. And that's what caught my eye, that there are at the bottom of that range. So maybe some more technical shorter term followers may gauge some interest here as well. But for me, on a medium term basis, you know, rest of this year and into 2018, I think this is an interesting one thematically. So one I like.
Marvellous. Okay, what else has been a bit of news out today?
So let's go from emerging markets to rail and bus, that old chestnut of an industry, and Go Ahead Group. Go Ahead had some numbers today. GOG is their ticker, and it's down again. It's down 5-odd% today, and you know, obviously they've had a bit of a shocker over the last year. I mean, the shares were 23 quid earlier this year, I think in sort of February, March time. And since then, obviously, they've had the whole debacle over the Southeastern train franchise and all of those strikes and issues and late running trains and everything else. They've lost another franchise, one I know very well, one I use quite often to get to London, London Midland. That's been announced there. They've lost that franchise to another consortium. They'll be leaving that franchise in December. So that's all been bits of bad news. And buses, obviously, is not the world's most growth-centred industry.
yeah.
So kind of put it all together, it's been a bit of a shocker, and the shares responded accordingly. As I say, down another 5-odd% today, 16.50-odd as I when I last looked. But what's interesting again here, that the sort of the 16 quid level has been a sort of a longer-term kind of support. You've got to go back quite a long way. But if you take a look at even something like a 10-year chart, you can see that actually 16 quid is a big resistance support level. So again, that kind of piqued my interest. So I did a few numbers and a couple of interesting observations. Number one is the They're paying over 100 p's worth of dividends this year, which is no bad shakes on a 16 quid and change share price. Mm. Number two, whilst buses are not growthy, they're not exactly contracting either. It's kind of one of these sort of annuity type businesses, and so the level of profitability from their UK bus operations, regional and London, is kind of pretty steady. And when I sort of look at the level of profitability, it sort of covers the kind of the current market cap. And so in a way, their problems in rail, you've kind of got any upside they've got in rail for free. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they're doing some interesting things internationally. They're talking about trying to generate up to 20% of their revenues and profits in the international zone over the next few years. They actually run quite a lot of buses in Singapore, for example, and they've actually won also some German rail franchises. Put it all together, I actually think Go Ahead, it might have a very bad press in this country, and for all the right reasons about their troubled rail franchises particularly. But I do wonder whether that sort of sentiment low, or that sentiment malaise around the shares, whether it's sort of not quite caught up with where the share is today, which is not in a great state, but not in perhaps as bad a state as the share price is telling you. So for me, actually, I'm thinking it could be a value buy. And I'm quite liking these lower 1600 levels.
Yeah. Well, I always like to, you know, I never like to. I know momentum is a good thing, but you know, when you see a test of this, like in fact, it's been testing at £17. See if it dips back above that, because it's been testing £17, but it's broke below today. So you could see a little leg low. You never know, but you pay your money, you take your choice. But
that's right. Or you take a journey on a bus or a train, as per Go Ahead. But there you go. I mean, what I would observe is, if they can consistently pay out 100 p's worth of dividends, yeah. And I think judging by their level of debt, what the bus operations chuck off and stuff like that, that might be doable. That's a little bit of income support, which obviously will interest some people. And then from a total return perspective, they can get some of these international ops working. If things like the Southeastern franchise, which, you know, they claim it's had the biggest improvement in customer service, well, I should jolly well hope so, given it was absolutely apocalyptic customer service for much of the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Just maybe that sentiment and numbers game may just start to turn and evolve. So we'll have to see. But I'm thinking, yeah, lower 1600s, I'm intrigued by this one. Yeah, I think it can have a bit of value to it.
Yeah, definitely around 16, I'd be more looking at it. Yeah, cool. All right, anything else, Chris?
Final quick one, Biffa. A name in sort of the waste management yeah. related industry. I'm sure you've seen their bins and other.
It's a good name, isn't it, Biffa?
It's a good name. It's obviously one which has been owned by private equity and has come back to the market in the last year. And it's actually done rather well. The shares are up from sort of mid-160s to pushing deeper into the 220s, I think, as we speak. And what's interesting about this one is, nice trading update today, saying that they're still seeing sustained but business momentum, everything sort of on track, etc. What I like about this company is twofold. Number one is there is clear demand for their business. Like it or lump it, we produce far too much waste in this country, and we've got to do cleverer stuff with it and stick it in landfill. And Biffa do have some cleverer technologies other than landfill in order to help us do that and get paid for doing it. So that's good. They've got a good market position, and they augment that. This is the second ballpoint, by my observation, doing a lot of clever and good deals. I do like companies that buy other smaller names in their industry for much lower multiples than they themselves are trading on. And mm-hmm. I've seen other companies like DS Smith in packaging do this, and it's a very nice strategy, because when you're not overpaying for acquisitions, when you can integrate them and build up your brand and network that stage further, it just is fantastic, particularly if shareholders value your equity and your revenue stream and your business franchise at a higher multiple. So I really like it when Biffa do this, and they consistently seem to do it, these sort of tuck-in acquisitions in the waste and related areas. And I'm not surprised people are kind of warming up to the story. So private equity will progressively sell down some shares. That's just par for the course with names like this coming back to the market. But I have to say, looking at the sort of multiples they're trading on, looks quite interesting. And unfortunately, waste is a growth theme.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is a growth theme. You know, I've invested in a small company that is in the waste to energy market and very gasification, and it's very interesting to look at the figures around that. And some of the scary things is, do you know plastic? And it says on plastic bottles, it's got a little, you know, two arrows interlinked saying recyclable. Only 9% of plastic is actually recycled. A lot of it ends up in landfill, and a lot of it ends up being broken down and ends up in the oceans. And they're saying if we continue the way we are with plastic, by 2050, I think the date was, there'll be as much by weight, as much plastic in the oceans as fish by weight. And that's a worrying thing, you know. So it is something that needs to be tackled. So I think waste is a huge area, you know, and worth looking at. So
definitely not one for the bin, one to look at.
Hey, all right. Actually, you know, we've got to end there, Chris. Thanks for that. Speak next week, fella.
No problem. See you soon.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You know, Al?
I'm good, Just. How are you?
I'm all right. Not too bad. You know, I'm almost, you know, start of the year, well, start of September, not the year. We should say start of the year, actually, because we've had a summer break kind of thing. None of us have had a break, but apparently volume and liquidity is having a break. And so it's coming back into September. And
it's all those rich bankers bobbing around in their yachts in the Caribbean. That's why the volumes have fallen. But it will rise again this month.
Yeah, hopefully. Anyway, so I mean, there's some decent rises, but I'm still sort of lacking a bit of volume in interest, I think. I think St. Ledger's Day, which is the old adage, isn't until about the 14th.
That's right. Sell in May, stay away, don't go back until St. Ledger's Day. Indeed.
Anyway. Indeed. Right, what are you looking at, Al? What stocks?
Well, before that, I just want to say, if we're interrupted by the roar of a Rolls-Royce Merlin engine, that's because a Spitfire has just thundered over the house again. Yeah. And I wonder why, because I live in Seaford down there.
Is that your neighbour? He's a flash.
Maybe. I've discovered that there's a two-seat Spitfire operating from Biggin Hill that does pleasure flights, and the primary route is straight down over, literally over my house, out into the English Channel, turns round, loops the loop, and then comes back again.
Well, you were part of the sightseeing route there. They said, right now we're going over Alan Green's house. If you look to below you there, it's Alan Green there sitting in his, you know, we'll try and shake him up a bit. there we go.
That's the one. So I thought I'd look up and see how much these are. And apparently the basic pleasure flight from Biggin Hill down here is about a half-hour flight, I think, if that, total flight time, £2,500.
That wouldn't give me any pleasure at all, you know, shelling that out for half an hour.
God. Bit of history, though. Bit of history.
Yeah, I have more pleasure losing that in the stock market.
Yes, I'm good at that, too. Yeah. I'm good at that, too.
Okay, so anyway, on to stocks. What are you talking about?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to talk about a company that has been around since, it's been 36 years in business and has actually given me a bit of a profit so far this week, although I hesitate to say it will continue to do that. Mm. A company called Petrofac, which, of course, is very well-known company in the oil services industry. Epicodis PFC, they've got three arms, engineering, construction, where they basically work with companies to build the facilities and the rig and put everything in place. Engineering and production, where they create the production facilities to take the facility on stream, and integrated energy services, which includes their own asset portfolio. Now, the company's marred in a bit of controversy at the moment. First of all, looking at the interims which were announced last month, net profits were down 4%. Revenue and EBITDA were slightly down too. But the new order intake and backlog were at record levels, and the company said it was very well positioned for the second half. And this has been borne out in the last couple of days. There's a €340 million contract just announced in Turkey, and today a $700 million contract announced in Sakhalin Island, off the Russian coast somewhere. So already, I mean, there's big money agreed contract wise for the second half, and shares have responded positively to that. Stock's been as high as 978 pence, as low as 345 pence, and that's really historic lows. The last time it was that level was in 2008. So I think the thing about Petrofac is it's it's a real proxy for the oil and gas industry because it has a spread of activities. It's well de-risked in that regard. Of course, it has a long and illustrious history. The controversy recently surrounds the CEO, Ayman Asfari, who was informed by the Italian authorities that they were imposing sanctions against him for some dealings on, in an Italian company on the stock exchange there, which they deemed as illegal. He's protesting his innocence, and that case is currently sort of being fought. But that, to me, is an aside. There was a negative reaction in the share price to that, and I actually put a limit order in on the stock to buy the stock at around £4, which triggered the other day, and so far it seems to have been quite a good deal as the shares are now up to 428p. So I just think if you look at, if you want to take a closer look at this company, you've got a fairly decent dividend yield there to support supporting the stock as well. But look at the track record, look at the spread of risk within the industry, and the fact that the company has already said it's confident about the second half of the year and is already delivering on that promise. So not without risk. Obviously, this Ayman Asfari thing is a bit of an unknown, but it seems to me that that's not actually connected directly to the Petrofac business. So one to watch. Do your own research. But I have actually bought into the company, a limit order triggered, and I now have a chunk of stock around £4.
Yeah, I was looking at wondering why they were down. Yeah, I know there was that controversy. It's nothing like a bit of controversy in the board to spark a bit of interest. But they've got net debt of $1 billion, which is, they say, in line with expectations. They're taking a range of measures to strengthen the balance sheet and reduce net debt. And one of those is they've rebased the dividend, haven't they? So to a more sustainable but progressive level anyway. But but whenever you see a stock like that, and I've got, you see a big company being sold off massively, because this time, at the start of this year, pretty much, or in March, they were £9.38 a share, and now £4.31 a share. So you think all that is almost priced in, pretty much, And so if you can buy at the lower the trading range here, but obviously do your own. This is not a filter of mine, actually. One of the filters I have of companies that have been oversold but pay a dividend, still paying a dividend.
Yes.
And this is one of I think this is number one, actually, one of the biggest fallers. But do your own research. But sometimes, the risk sometimes is priced in. I was going to say, it's fallen so hard, so fast, that you think, can it go any further or would it go any further? But if they continue to, get new contracts on board and they're dealing with debt and they've got one issue, like you say, with that legal thing hanging over. Is he this? What is he? Is he a CEO or what is he? Is he the CEO?
CEO, CEO, Ayman Asfari, yeah. But I think on the contrary front, I mean, the last 2 days, you've got a $700 million contract with Sakhalin Island and a €340 million contract in Turkey. I mean, that's getting on toward the market cap anyway, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, so that's worth the debt. Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. So that's PFC Petrofac. Worth a look. I think I'll put them on my watch list. I think just there. Maybe get a little dabble, a little punt for there. Do your own research, people. Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, two more for you. First of all, I want to talk about Destiny Pharma, DEST. Now, this is a brand new float, and I have a personal interest here. As listeners may know, I founded a company called Share Crazy at the Sussex Innovation Centre down in Brighton in 2000, which we sold on in 2007. And one of the companies there at the time was Destiny Pharma, founded by a chap called Dr. Bill Love. And they've been working on for years what they call the XF series of light-activated antibacterial drugs that combat hospital superbugs such as MRSA. The XF series of drugs has been comprehensively developed. They've now got 90 patents worldwide, they raised $15.5 million gross via placing at £1.57p or 157p. They were initially going for $13.5 million, but it was oversubscribed. Lots of institutional interest, the company floated at 157p, and the shares have shot straight up, as we know, to 235p. So it's had a pretty stellar start to its life on the stock market. So it's now worth 98 million sterling. Now, the active series of drugs have been substantially de-risked. It's got a very robust IP. They also announced a framework agreement with China Medical Systems Holdings to basically market the active drugs throughout China and the Asian marketplace. And also the company that the controlling shareholder of CMS, China Medical Systems, was also involved in the placing of Destiny Pharma. So the interests are very much aligned there. And just seeing this company grow from the innovation center to the company it is now is obviously fantastic. And Bill Love is still involved as the founder, who I've known at the innovation center for some years. But also the CEO, Neil Clark, has now come in and is helping develop the business. And this company really does have a very bright future. You maybe take the view that following the float, the shares have shot up too high, so you may want to wait for a while. But to my mind, this company's got very solid IP, a very solid drugs offering, and I think it's got a great future. And it's, who knows? I mean, this could be looked at by one of the bigger drug players as something they want to snap up. So it could well be an acquisition target in the years to come too.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the ticker again, Al, you said?
DEST, Destiny Pharma.
DEST, okay. And, you know, with a guy like Bill Love involved, you've got to take a good look at that, I think. Any man with the name Bill or Willie Love, it makes you do a double take.
Do you know, Joss, until you mentioned that, I'd never ever thought.
excellent stuff. So I'd say DEST. Okay, anything else, Al?
Okay, yeah. Working with. No.
So you can't stop thinking about Willie Love now, can you?
No, you totally throw me there, Joss. Totally throw me there. David Paul at VectorVest published this yesterday, and I've taken a closer look at this company. And again, this is one of these below the radar companies. It's a company called Midwich Group. MIDW is the name of the company. Now, Midwich Group has a market cap of about 300 million. Shares have been as high as 3.95p, as low as 1.95p on the year, and it also pays a small dividend too. So it's something you can invest in, and you get a return on going. But what's interesting is that this company, it's a bit of a grey company, I guess. It provides format displays, projectors, signage, and sells audiovisual equipment. It's got approximately 10,000 customers around the world. It published a pre-close trading update in July, said it traded well during the period, and it also made an acquisition earlier in the year called EarPro, which made a very positive start and contributed ahead of expectations for its first 3 months. And the company said as a result of that strong first half and indications of what's already happening for the second half, it reckons full year results will be comfortably ahead of the previous guidance. Now, interestingly, we are in the run up to those results now. They're announced next week on 12th of September. So the stock hasn't really moved since then. So it could be a very exciting time to get into the company. And this was also picked up by VectorVest 2. Well, they actually first logged the stock on the system in September last year. It's got a forecasted earnings growth of 28%, which VectorVest flags up as a great value company. And based on the forward growth projections and where the company is at present, the VectorVest has a rating of £4.46 a share against the current 3.85p. So that's obviously something that's well worth taking into account. But just to go back to my initial point, this is one of those under the radar companies. There's not a great deal of broker coverage on the company, but it's a company that's steadily growing earnings, steadily growing organically and through acquisition, probably has a very bright future going forward, and Cooper will be one of those stocks that you could just add to your portfolio, tuck away, and look at it in a couple of years' time, and it may well have doubled in size and paid a dividend en route. So what's not to like?
Mm-hmm. Well, anything not to like. I mean, it's one of those, with VectorVest, it's a momentum player, isn't it, as well? So they've been
very much.
I mean, I generally, Yeah, I am not brave enough to play those. I'd like to see a decent pullback, but no change in the fundamentals, because we know that happens with shares. We know shares pull back for no reason, and it makes people question why they pull back. And people sell just because they've pulled back. They think, what's going on? And that begets selling, and then more people sell. And then you look at it, hang on, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with this company. You just keep selling for no reason. And I think that,
which that's... Which is almost the case with Petrofac as well, as we were saying earlier. You know, but yeah, Midwich, there's been no pullback. There's not probably not a huge amount of liquidity in the shares, but again, there's if we look at the chart over the past year, it's just top right hand corner stuff all the way. So there's no reason really at this stage to expect that the earnings next week won't be at least well ahead of expectations, and possibly there could be some further sort of growth to that we are yet to find out about too.
Yeah, well, they need to be. There's a trouble. When you get these companies, there's the growth quickly that in the chart goes up. If there's any disappointment, they do come back a bit, don't they? I would wait, you know. Yeah. I mean, personally, I'd wait till the results are out. If they fly, they fly. But if they don't, maybe there's an opportunity there. They're decent, but not mind-blowing. Because, you know, the companies like that, when they've had a chart like that, they travel, don't they, on the rumour, and then obviously the news comes out, and obviously it's just confirmation of what people thought beforehand, you know?
So, by the rumour, sell the news, yeah. Maybe, as you say, if the stock doesn't move higher as people expect on the day of the announcements, then a lot of investors may decide to take profits, so the share falls on the basis of more sellers than buyers for another reason, and then, as you say, that could be the time to get back in. So pick it up below 385p or below 380p, you could be doing very well.
Exactly, and do you know what? It's just another investment idea there. So, you know, do your own research, everyone. And Al, thanks for that. And we'll speak next week, fella.
Thanks, Jess. Speak next week. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Alba Mineral Resources, ALBA. At four, 88 Energy, 88E. At three, always there, I just talked to Colin earlier on, Ascent Resources, AST. At two, UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. It's been there a lot recently. Number one, massive riser yesterday. Let me just check the chart. I think it was up by about, was it 70? I'm thinking about 70%. Is that in my head? Is that right there? It went from, let's have a look at the chart. Let's check out the chart. Check the chart. Went from 0.1. Yeah, pretty much 75% up yesterday. Wow. It's Frontera Resources, FRR. All right, top five most liked RNSs on the platform was from five, Highland Natural Resources, H&R, drilling completed at second East Denver well. Four, Audio Boom. Boom, ticker. Third quarter update, very good positive update. I think it's the first update they've done where the share price has taken off the back of it. So there's always been a bit of expectation, and some people will be disappointed. But this is proving good. I did a tweet out, actually. I said they are in line to exceed, I think, their target for the year. Their target revenue for the year is 5 million. And with this update now, all they have to do is increase their quarter revenue from quarter three to quarter four by about 14%. And to put that in perspective, they did a 32% increase from quarter two to quarter three. And they've been growing, you know, like that. Each quarter, pretty much. And I think it's on last year's quarter, it was like 329% increase. So I think they're on course to do that 5 million revenue. And of course, the following year's 18 million target. So it's growing. And I tell you what, a very telling sign of the podcast industry is that WPP, advertising giant, had a bit of an issue with their update recently. And their share price dropped off, and they are a FTSE 100 company. But they have now invested in a podcast company of late, which just shows they realise, and they did blame recently, you know, the traditional advertising model is sort of dying because of new digital media marketing and all that, and so they're now buying into podcasting industries. And when you get the big guys doing that, it's very significant. It means the big players are starting to take notice, is that they're slow to move, but when they do start to move, when they start piling money in, then, you know, the market will move. Three, Vesarion, VRS, contract win. A very good contract win, this. Not with the graphene sector of their business, but with another sector, total carbides. The interesting thing about this is that it's with a global aerospace company. And you're thinking, hang on, why are they chatting to a global aerospace company? And also, at the end of the RNS, Neil says, updates very soon on other parts of the business. And graphene, of course, can be well used, apparently, in the aerospace industry. And if they strike up a contract with an aerospace, it's a global, you know, player. Could be transformational for Vasarin. I'm just putting, you know, two and two together, and maybe getting five, but it's worth looking into that RNS. Very interesting. At two, UK Oil and Gas, UK OG, operational update. And number one, the most liked RNS on Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours. I spoke to the CEO on the podcast today. It was from Ascent Resources, AST, operational update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.